the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Well, one of the top priorities in Washington these days is tax reform. But like many other bills that have been tried to be put through this year, nothing has been done so far. So what is the likely chances it will actually get passed? Joining me on the program from Putnam Investments is Christopher Hennessy. Chris, let's talk about who are going to be the key players. I guess if we were looking at a football game, looking at the quarterback, the receivers, who are the people who are going to walk this across the finish line?
Well, sure, Jim. So Paul Ryan, clearly Speaker of the House, because all tax legislation starts in the House Ways and Means. And then you've got Kevin Brady, who's actually Chair of House Ways and Means. And then on the Senate side, Mitch McConnell, he's the Senate Majority Leader. Orrin Hatch leads the Senate Finance Committee, which is the counterpart of House Ways and Means. And then you got two other key players, Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and Gary Cohen, who's Director of the National Economic Council. So those are kind of the key players. Now, you know, beyond that, you got some other people you've seen in the news. Bob Corker is in a tweeting fight with Trump. And Corker is a very, very influential, powerful person in the Senate. He's chair of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. But I think they worked that out because I saw in the news that John Kelly, chief of staff, talked to Corker. So, but those six are the key anyway, Jim, to your question.
Okay. Now, it seems like they really want to get this through because this week, Paul Ryan said, if we have to, we will work through the entire Christmas season to get this passed. Chris, do you expect this to pass this year, or can you fill us in terms of a timeline of where you think this might transpire?
Yes. So the timeline, I mean, I think it may not get signed by the president until January, but here's where we're at right now. This legislation will be connected to the new fiscal year 18 budget. So this is a process called reconciliation. The House has passed the budget. The Senate Budget Committee has passed it, but not the full Senate. They will vote, I think, within the next few weeks. Then in November, this goes for markup in the committees. In other words, they'll release legislation. In fact, they have to do so by around November 13th. So this would come out of House Ways and Means and Senate Finance. There will be differences between the two, and those differences will then have to be compromised and reconciled. So that brings you into December, Jim. Although I would say that if they're willing to work through the holidays, maybe President Trump can get this signed before the end of the year.
And if they sign it at the end of the year, would they make it retroactive, or do you think it would have to go into effect, let's say, January of 2018?
Right. So initially, there was discussion about making maybe pieces of it retroactive, particularly the corporate reduction in tax rates. That's not going to happen. It's too costly, too expensive. So with one exception, it's going to be January 1, 2018 forward. The one exception is kind of interesting. It's on the corporate side. And retroactive to, I believe it's September 27th of this year, moving forward, corporations can deduct any purchases of machinery and equipment, unlimited deductions. See, currently, if you go out and buy a $10 million piece of equipment, you have to depreciate that over 5 to 7 years. So even though you're out all the cash this year or immediately, you don't get the tax write-off. You get it incrementally over the next 5 to 7 years. They're going to change that. The proposal has changed that, allow an immediate write-off. And so I would expect, Jim, that companies are going to load up on equipment this year because they're in a higher tax bracket this year than they will be next year. But everything else will be prospective January 1, 2018 forward.
All right, let's talk about the composition of both the House and the Senate. And the reason I want to bring this up is certain provisions of this bill. In the House, there's 240 Republicans, 194 Democrats. So there's a clear majority there. It seems like the real issue or problem is in the Senate, where the Republicans, there's 52 to 48. So they only have a two-seat majority. So there isn't much leeway to lose it. And we saw this with the repeal of health care, where you have Murkowski, you have Collins, and then, of course, you have McCain. So are these three, could these three be a potential problem on getting this through?
Yeah. So from what I understand so far, John McCain has said he will not vote for tax reform. It's going to increase the deficit. And remember, they've agreed already to $1.5 trillion in tax cuts. So unless you can pick that up through economic growth, John McCain has said no. Rand Paul hasn't committed either way. So right now they've lost one vote. They can get down to 50 because the vice president could break a tie. So you are correct. The Senate is going to be tight. Now, interestingly, there was a very compelling article in the Wall Street Journal earlier this week, which argues, look at the deficit for last year, ending September 30th, 2017, came in at $668 billion deficit, which was up about 12% from the previous year. But the spending only rose 3%. So what's the problem? Revenue. Tax revenue, corporate tax revenues fell $3 billion. And the argument the Wall Street makes is that's because there's no economic growth right now. There's no economic expansion. In fact, over the last 10 years, our economy has only grown at about 1.9% a year. So the supply side economics, Republicans are saying, look, we're going to get with tax reform 3% economic growth. That's going to really pick up revenues. And that's been McCain's argument. So John McCain should read that article. By the way, nothing against John McCain. I'm a veteran. He's a hero to me. But I think he's really got to understand the economics of this. Every 1% drop in tax rate, well, let me put it another way. If you get a 1% increase in GDP growth, so 2% to 3%, the government picks up $2.5 trillion in revenue over 10 years. And that's the expectation with this whole tax reform. Yeah.
Now, one of the problems, though, isn't it, Chris? You know, there's static accounting. The CBO uses static accounting, which basically says, if I have $1 million of revenue based on a, let's just make this simple math, a 50% tax rate, and I reduce that to 40, I get less revenue. They don't account for the very thing you just mentioned, which is economic growth.
Yeah. So the news on that right now is that the Senate GOP budget committee, you know, they had agreed to $1.5 trillion and actually lost revenues. And the Republicans believe that that lost revenue would increase economic growth. Now, the GOP, to your point, the Senate GOP budget will balance in 10 years, assuming average economic growth of 2.6% a year. And that's the same assumption made in the pending House budget. And that's higher than President Trump's budget proposal, which was 1.9%. So they get into this argument about that they use static, which is just a mathematical computation. Okay, we bring the tax rates down and we lose revenue, and you can compute that, versus dynamic, which is how much impact this will have on the economy. The problem with dynamic is there are different models. You know, Wharton has a model, and there are two or three models. And when you go out 10 years, it's pretty hard to forecast over 10 years. And you got to remember something else here. If parts of this legislation will, in fact, increase the deficit over 10 years, they expire at the end of 10 years. They sunset versus being made permanent if, according to the Congressional Budget Office, the estimate is over 10 years, they will not decrease revenue or increase the deficit. So it's important.
I want to talk about something that can maybe offset that, and that is this repatriation of overseas profits. Because, you know, 35% of zero is still zero. 10% of $2.5 trillion or $2 trillion is a lot of money. So what about the offsets that could come in with repatriation of overseas profits?
Right, exactly right. So the most likely, again, we haven't seen the details, but most likely the $2.6 trillion will be taxed on a mandatory basis, meaning whether or not you bring it back, it's going to be taxed. So companies will bring it back. Now, the tax will likely be 8 to 10% payable over 3 to 5 years. So that money, that $2.6 trillion, will come back into the United States. Companies will be able to use it for stock buybacks, for dividends, obviously for equipment and machinery purchases, for additional employment, and so forth. And it will pick up, because you're going to have some tax on it, not a 35% tax or a 20% tax, but some tax on it, it will, in fact, obviously increase revenue because it will be taxed to some extent. You know, you could do the math. If you say it's $2.5 trillion and it's, say, a 10% tax, well, that's $250 billion in revenue. Actually, the note I have indicates they'll pick up about $185 billion in revenue through that repatriation.
Now, isn't there widespread support? I guess maybe there's more support, even among Democrats, for some kind of corporate tax relief, because we have the highest tax rates in the world. And the other idea is they like the idea of those overseas profits coming back home, because that's taxed.
Correct. So there's no question that when you look at bringing corporate rates down from, let's say, 35% to 20%, along with repatriation, that this is very positive for the markets. And again, you know, some of the research that I have access to indicates that when you look at the foreign earnings that are parked overseas by industry, by sector, it's pharma, it's biotech, it's life sciences, it's software, it's tech. You know, those are the big areas. Now, there's another interesting thing, Jim, which is, you know, we talk about this 35% rate, but the effective rate that the S&P 500, the big companies pay, is like 27 to 28%. But U.S. domestic companies, you know, companies that have most of their revenue here in the United States, their effective rate is closer to 33%. So those companies are going to get a drop from 33 to 20%. They're going to benefit more than those large S&P 500s.
So I want to talk about something within the bill, and then we'll get into the details. But one aspect of the bill is the rates would go down, but some of the deductions for medical, property, and casualty, but the big one is the deductibility of state and property taxes. It's my understanding, Chris, there's like 33 Republicans in the House that are in high tax states, my own state of California being the highest tax state. What about the impact of that? Because that could be tax increases for people that live in California.
Absolutely, Jim. In fact, you may have known, I've been in California all week. I'm in San Diego right now, and I started the trip in San Francisco, and then I worked my way down to Palo Alto, and I've been talking about this, doing meetings. And so this is called SALT. SALT is state and local tax deduction. The proposal would be all income tax deductions are gone with the exception of mortgage interest and charity. So now you look at the blue states. You look at California, New York, New Jersey, Hawaii, Minnesota, Oregon. They're going to get creamed. Now, you got to think about it, though, a little bit. And by the way, I don't think this is going to happen, and I'll come back to them in a minute, because your point's well taken. Just between New York, New Jersey, and California, there are 28 Republican members of the House. And their voting constituents don't want this to happen. But think about an example. Okay, if I have $500,000 of income and I live in California, and I'm just going to make this up, but I'm probably pretty close. My California tax is $50,000. Well, let's say my real estate taxes are another $30,000. So that's $80,000. Well, if I lose that deduction, the 35% tax bracket, you know, that's costing me around $26,000-$27,000. But on my $500,000 of income, my tax rate's going down from 40% to 35%. So I'm saving 5% of $500,000, which is $25,000. So I'm going to pay a little more. So the higher your income or the higher your real estate taxes or your state income taxes, the more this would hurt you. Now, here's what I think is going to happen. I think because of the pushback amongst Republicans that represent those high income tax states, we're going to go to a phase up. So in other words, when your income's really high, you're going to lose most of your real estate and state income tax deduction. Right now, we have a phase up. Right now, if you're over $313,800 married, you lose 3 cents for every dollar over that of itemized deductions. So I think it's going to be something similar to that, just applicable to state and local taxes. So if your income's $100,000 or $50,000, you will retain most of your state and local tax deduction. I think that's going to be the compromise.
Yeah, because otherwise, how do you get these guys to go along? Now, let's get into some of the specifics. Right now, and of course, you've seen Paul Ryan with a postcard, which represents a tax return. Obviously, if you get rid of all the itemized deductions, I mean, it would be nice if you just filled out a postcard. They want three tax brackets, 12, 25, 35. And I guess the real question is, where do those tax brackets kick in?
Sure. So here's what I know about that. And again, to be clear about this, this was not part of the blueprint. In other words, the dollar numbers haven't been released. But earlier this year, stuff I read would indicate that between, this is for a married couple, if you're single, you would just cut these numbers in one half. 0 to 75,000 would be 12%. 75,000 to 225,000 would be a 25%. And then 225 or over would be a 35%. That's where I think it'll come out, or at least very close to that. And then along with that, the standard deduction, which is the amount you could take if you don't want to take itemized. Today, it's 12,700. That's going to double to 24, 25,000. So 90% of all people, your postcard example, filing a tax return, are going to take the standard deduction.
The other thing that it would also do, they would eliminate personal exemptions, and also they would eliminate the AMT tax, which in many cases does catch people in high tax states like California, and they would eliminate the estate tax. But there's no clarity in terms of, Chris, what would happen to the stepped up basis and cost, which eliminates a lot of capital gains at death.
Right. So I actually think the estate tax is going to remain. Here's the reason. It's an optic situation. The Democrats are, this is just another big tax break for the wealthy. So, for example, I was in Phoenix a couple weeks ago when the blueprint came out, and USA Today had in the headlines, you know, the Trump family will save billions of dollars if there's no estate tax. So I think they're going to keep the estate tax, maybe take the exemption amount, which is $5.9 million, and raise it up considerably. And you have to remember, right now, there are only 5,500 deaths per year in this country where there actually has to be an estate tax filed. So it doesn't really impact that many people. If it is actually repealed, then likely they'll do something with step up in cost basis to fair market value. They would probably eliminate it, but carve out a $10 million exception. And, you know, if anyone's listening in and saying, okay, well, wait a minute, you know, I'm really pretty wealthy and I'm going to do all this advanced estate planning, but if estate tax is going to be repealed, I don't have to do that. That's a bad, bad strategy. Number one, all this estate tax, if it's repealed, could come back in 10 years. And then politically, we don't know what's going to happen 3.5 years from now in the next presidential congressional election.
This is something that concerns me, Chris, and we saw this definitely when we had tax reform under Reagan. So let's say they lower the tax rates to 12, 25, 35. They get rid of all these itemized deductions, medical, property and casualty, state and property taxes. And then let's say 3 years from now, a Democrat gets in and he goes, you know, we're just going to raise the tax rates back to where they used to be. And they raise the tax rates, but now you've lost the deductions. So you're paying more taxes.
Sure, that could absolutely happen because you got to remember that the biggest driver, I mentioned the deficit earlier of $668 billion, I think. And the biggest driver of that deficit is Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. And those numbers aren't going to slow down because of an aging population. So unless we get economic growth, and that picks up tax revenues, they may well, 3 or 4 years from now, to your example, really need additional revenue and go after raising the tax rates. Now you've lost your deductions.
Yeah, because that's exactly under Reagan. We brought the tax rates down to 28%. And then, of course, the deficits were 400,000, which seems trivial now compared to where we had them at one time. And under George Bush, read my lips, no new taxes. He was forced because of deficits to raise taxes.
That's exactly right. Yep. We've consistently over the last 60 years in this country had tax revenue at about 18.5% of our economy or of GDP. And spending around 24%. That's been a straight line, despite the fact that tax rates have moved around up and down, and the economy's gotten bigger. So unless they can somehow solve, and there's no political will to do this, Social Security and Medicare, we will continue, that 668 number, I think, will continue to go up. And in fact, President Trump wants to spend more in defense.
Wow. Well, let's move on for a minute to corporate taxes. It's proposed coming down from 35% to 20. And here's an important one for a lot of individuals that have a subchapter S or partnerships. The pass-through rate would drop from 39.6 to 25. The expensing you had mentioned earlier of equipment for 5 years, net interest deduction. It sounds like they're going to limit that. And a shift from a worldwide to a territorial system. That's big.
Yep, because that will eliminate the motivation to leave profits overseas.
So is there any chance, in your opinion, Chris, that because there are Democrats that like the repatriation idea, even though, let's say, there's a possibility that some Republican or a couple may not vote for this bill, John McCain being one right now, is there a possibility that the president could pick up some Democrats?
Yes. Yeah, so I think if it looked like they couldn't get the whole thing through as one package, both corporate and individual, what could happen would be they'd break out the corporate separately under what's called regular rules of order. So in other words, the assumption would be in the U.S. Senate, they could pick up at least 8 votes who are Democrats and thus get around the 60-vote filibuster because they'd have 52 Republicans plus 8, assuming all the Republicans went along with corporate. And I think McCain probably would. And as you said, there is a fair amount of Democratic support for corporate tax reform.
So if they get some of this through, if you look at it on the surface, you would say, gosh, my income taxes go down. But you have to be thinking in the background, what if this all changes? And this applies also to estate taxes, because we know, for example, in a couple of years from now, we're going to have another presidential election. And the political makeup of Congress and the White House could change dramatically, and this all could be reversed.
Yeah, exactly. And we've seen over history, certainly tax laws change and some stuff gets reversed. And one interesting thing we have not seen, the estate tax exemption amount has always gone up. But you're right. I mean, you know, the best way I explain it, and you mentioned a few examples, but John Kennedy started, the top marginal rate was 91%. That was 1961. That got cut to 70, and then Reagan cut it to 50, and then Reagan cut it to 28. But then it could turn around, and then it went back up again. So clearly that could happen, depending on the economy and the deficits and the budgets.
You make reference in a presentation you made about these deficits, because we know, number one, the population is aging. That means more people on Medicare, more people on Social Security. And we saw the problem with the disability fund back in 2016. So unless they have the guts to actually tackle entitlement reform, these budget deficits are only going to get bigger going forward.
Absolutely. I mean, Social Security is approaching $1 trillion a year now, and it's just unsustainable over a long period of time. You've got to solve it. And the one thing, Jim, I think that's kind of saved us in a way is the interest rates. So, you know, one benchmark I always use is the 10-year U.S. government bond rate, treasury rate. It's around 2.3%. And imagine, I mean, average of that rate from the end of the Second World War forward is about 5.9%. So imagine if that rate begins to go up, and now the U.S. government has to pay a lot more out in interest, which is going to take away from other areas they can spend. So that's kind of saved us, but that's not going to last forever.
No, in fact, I took a look, and it's amazing. Between 2008 and 2016, even though the debt in the country went up by, what, $8.6 trillion, government interest expense actually declined from $450 billion to $430 billion. So the debt went up, but the interest cost went down, and we know that won't last forever. So overall, if we were to sum up right now, for many people, this is going to be a plus. The standard deduction goes from 12 to 24, for singles, 6 to 12. So for many individuals in the lower bracket, they're probably going to be, in some cases, a zero bracket, so that could be positive. But overall, number one, what would you assign the probability of this getting passed, either at the end of the year or certainly the beginning of the year?
I think it's between 60 and 70% probability. The only reason I'm not saying it's 90 or 100 is because we haven't seen all the details yet. And as you indicated earlier, the U.S. Senate, and I totally agree, is where the possible stumbling block could be. But right now, I give it 60 to 70% because, again, to go back to the major point, Republicans have not had a win. A lot of them are up in the House of Representatives for re-election. Well, they're all up for re-election, I should say, a year from now. And a 24-seat swing in the House, and they lose the House to the Democrats. So they want to get this done.
You know, you are a lawyer and a CPA. You deal with taxes. I think it would be safe to say, even if this does get passed, don't sit back, whether it's estate planning or income tax planning, and feel you're safe or you don't need to do any planning, because we know this could all change in 3 years.
Absolutely right.
Chris, I want to thank you for joining us on the program, and thanks for that update. I do agree with you. I think there's a high probability this is going to get passed, because next year is a congressional election year. And if you can't repeal Obamacare and you can't even get tax reform, what are you going to tell the voters in November of 2018?
You got to get something done.
Well, Chris, thanks so much for joining us on the program. All the best to you, sir.
Anytime. Bye-bye now.
Well, that concludes my interview with Chris Hennessy, who follows taxes closely for Putnam Investments. And once again, high probability that something like this will get done, because next year is an election year and these guys want to keep their jobs. But I really think the Trojan horse here is they get rid of deductions, and then later on, because we are going to be experiencing higher budget deficits, there's no way around it. You can't have 70% of the budget, which is Social Security, Medicare, and interest on the debt. What's the likelihood that we'll remain with low interest rates forever over the next 10 years, and there's more people that are going to retire? So sooner or later, we're going to be facing a budget crisis, and you know what they do in a budget crisis, just like 1991, they raise taxes. So if you're sitting there and you look at this and you say, this is good news, I don't need to plan, don't think that way. Because if there's one thing that's certain, death and taxes, and maybe there's another certainty as well, they always do change taxes. We had a tax reform bill in 2012, had one in 2010. We had tax reform bills in 2002 and 2003. So the one constant is death and taxes, and maybe throw the third one, tax law changes. I'm Jim Poplava. Thanks for listening.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.